And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Man, covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one right here, Alabama. Y'all, I'm talking about this show goes like woo, way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. I got a couple more texts, and I'm going to jump right in on the dipper. So Trey from Madison says, and he a little bit derogatory, so I'll just say, he says, the girl on Trump's security detail would at least make a really good bullet stopper. If she would at least stand in front of the president instead of hiding behind him. Why are people asking about Melendez's need to resign? Shouldn't he be automatically removed from office? I think he has to. But then again, he's got the right of appeal. So I don't know what the – there's going to be a law about not serving in Congress if you're a convicted felon, but that may be allowed to be appealed first. But, yeah, in case you hadn't heard, New Jersey Senator Democrat Bob Melendez was just convicted for abuse of his office for personal gain. Wow. Gold bars and all of it. Dustin from Hazel Green says, Tim Kennedy was on the Drinking Bros podcast with Rob O'Neill and Canadian sniper Dallas Alexander. They had a very interesting strategy for the Dems. Knowing they've already all but lost, just run Kamala Harris against Trump so that she will lose, thus ending her political career, so the party didn't have to deal with her in 2028. Actually a good plan if you're a Democrat. Wow. Wow. Dustin, that's kind of genius. Gary from Decatur, I think questioning the premise of females not being able to meet physical standards required by the Social Security is a loser, as many members of the military have been questioning the female standards for many years. These complaints have been dismissed with the argument that everyone had a right to serve their country if they can meet minimum standard required. Even if they can't, it's a long and arduous process to remove them. PC at its worst. Okay, I'm trying to make sure I understand your point. Because here's the thing. No one is saying women can't serve. If I understand you correctly, you took my statement about one person and said that I'm making some kind of, you know, politically correct statement that, you know, we can't have women serving. Not at all. There's been some pretty dynamic members of the Secret Service. In fact, there was another member of the Secret Service detail on the scene, a female who looked like she was game on, brother, and rightfully so. The one I'm talking about looks like she should not have even been there. Like, maybe she was more like a Girl Scout troop leader as opposed to a Secret Service protective detail member. And when you watch her try to holster a weapon, you go tell me if she looks like she has confidence in her position. Last one, then I'll jump on the dipper. Trey from Madison. With the really big documents case dropped, which is coming later in the show, I fear the judge in New York is going to slap some jail time on Trump out of desperation since other opportunities are lost. Yeah, Trump's going to... That to me is one of the most appealable cases I've ever seen. And I do believe that even the introduction of some of the evidence that came out in that trial is now barred by virtue of the immunity ruling we got on another Trump case from the Supreme Court of the United States. So long way to go for Judge Mershon on that one. And if he knows what's good for him, I think he's going to wind up, I say good for him, like in terms of not being reversed or made to look the fool, he ought to go ahead and just hold it. Okay. Now, but I will say this, though. Now that I said that, let me rephrase. There has been a conviction. Regardless of whether the judge handled the case correctly, a jury has now entered a verdict, and the judge is now required to conduct a sentencing. He did delay the sentencing till September, but nonetheless, he is now required to move forward with sentencing, from which there will then stem an appeal. So Judge Mershon, I think he was a knucklehead, but he's also got certain things he has to do by virtue of his position now. All right, last night, number one, Triple Dipper, the RNC. Last night was a big night, y'all. And for all intents and purposes, it appears that, you know, I've even heard people describe it as the room was electric. I mean, like the energy was palpable. And that's to be expected. It's beyond a pep rally now, though. It's beyond a pep rally. There's not just the sense that we have a mission, because that's a huge deal, like a real sense of mission right now in the right to take this election and to take our country back, all right? But not only that, there's the real sense that we as a nation, not just President Trump, but that we as a nation dodged a bullet this past weekend. Can you imagine what last night would have been like if that assassin had succeeded, if President Trump hadn't moved his head just slightly? It would have been an entirely different day. It would have been a wake. It wouldn't have been a rally. It would have been a wake. So there was a massive sigh of relief and pretty much an exaltation, if you will, that we all dodged a bullet, because the chaos that would have ensued on the eve of the nominating convention. But there's also the real desire to get Biden out of office. Everybody in that room was on mission. This was not going to be a place where Code Pink was going to show up and protest in the room, right? No. This is all, the entire room was filled up with the exception of members of the press, this entire room was filled up with elected officials and duly elected delegates who represented each of their states, and they were all there for one purpose. When you have that many people in a room, excited, relieved, game on, focused, as a team, you can imagine what the room felt like. Dana Perino talked about when Trump entered the room, because he did. Trump came in last night. In case you didn't see it, he came in. His entire right ear was covered in a white bandage. But he walked in, waved at the crowd, and there were times when he looked a little emotional. And I would not be a bit surprised. It's been a long road. It's been a long road for him to get to that room. I mean, there was a time when perhaps he would have thought that he would never be able to enter that room again, with the intent of not just leading the country that he says he loves, and I believe he does, but getting his good name back. And he has fought, listen, the things he's had to endure just to get back in that room are on scale like nothing I've ever seen before. But he came in last night, and Dana Perino said that she remembers some electric moments. And she specifically cited, and I do agree, this was one of the best moments. You remember in the wake of 9/11, when they decided to reopen baseball and let people gather again, because, you know, everything shut down for a bit. No one knew what a target was going to be. President Bush went out and threw out the first pitch. And he walked out to an amazing crowd, just absolutely going bananas, because they were all gathered together. The flags were waving. And the President of the United States walked out on the mound and raised his hands up to the crowd and then threw a perfect strike. I mean, it was a real deal strike. It was like awesome. Like I've tried to throw the ball across the plate before, and it's not always good to look at. With all that pressure on him, the President of the United States stepped on that mound in front of the crowd, everybody going electric. And when that moment happened, when he threw that strike, the crowd went crazy. Rightfully so. Dana Perino says she has not felt this sense of excitement and sort of crowd joy outside of a church setting since that night. So we follow up with Trump getting the full nomination. All of the delegates cast their vote. For Alabama, Senator Tommy Tuberville was the spokesperson for the Alabama delegation, and he threw in all of Alabama's delegates. Several of my friends are down there right now. Shout out to State Representative Mac Butler. We've got several others who are down there that I know personally, just up there. Just what a cool moment to be there. And then once he received the nomination, the official part, I mean, he was the presumptive nominee to that point. Once he received the nomination, he was able to then make known his choice for a vice presidential running mate, and he chose Senator from Ohio, J.D. Vance. Now, a lot of folks have mixed feelings on J.D. Vance, and I'll be honest with you, when I heard the top, and I've never disliked J.D. Vance at all, but when I heard the top five, and he was one of the top five of the short list for picks for vice president, he was not my top pick personally. I thought, I don't think he has the background or experience. The guy is... I'm not for becoming part of the establishment. I don't want to see somebody up there 50 years. But I would like to have known that he had a little more time under his belt. So J.D. Vance came out of private life 2 years ago and ran for the Senate. 2 years, only one-third of his first term, he's running for vice president. That's wow. Just like, wow. Talk about a life change. In 2016, he was a private citizen who wrote a book. made him famous, his personal story called Hillbilly Elegy. And from that moment, he wound up running for the Senate. And from that moment, he wound up taking it with Trump's endorsement. I'll take it back. Did he have Trump's endorsement? And he couldn't stand Trump back in the day. He said some awful things about President Trump. So I look at it and think, wow, you couldn't stand President Trump and you said some pretty rude things about him, but they have apparently made up. I saw somebody made a great point this morning about that. The fact that he can say those things about Trump in 2016, I think it was, or there around, and then a few years later, run to be his vice presidential nominee. What does that say? It may say, number one, J.D. Vance is the kind of person who, some are going to call it, you know, political opportunism, whatever. I think you may be looking at, number one, J.D. Vance is willing to assess and recognize where he was wrong, which he has said by his own account. But the other is, what kind of person is Donald Trump that J.D. Vance would come around and go, okay, I can work with that guy? That's a reflection on Trump as much as a reflection on Vance. So that's where we are right now. Now, I'm going to come back from this break we're about to go on. And I got to tell you, there were some interesting speeches last night. If you have not heard, there were some people giving speeches last night at the Republican National Convention that no one would have expected. And I'd like to get your thoughts on it. We'll talk about that when we get back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. Sounds like a superpower. All right, so I got a story here from Fox News. Very interesting. Right after J.D. Vance was touted as the nominee for vice president, you immediately had the Biden campaign. They can't control themselves. They immediately came out calling him an extremist. The Biden-Harris headquarters issued a statement immediately on Twitter saying, Trump has selected far-right MAGA extremist J.D. Vance as his running mate. Vance is a 2020 election denier, supports a national abortion ban, voted against IVF access. Boy, they got all the big buzzwords in there, didn't they? Like, oh, God, cats and dogs living together. It's the end of times as we know it. Anyway, what a ridiculous bunch of crap. But anyway, he's an election denier. How about that? We all deny the election. For the most part, we look at it and go, that was the most jacked up election we've ever seen. But anyway, nonetheless, the Trump campaign immediately came back and pointed out that here we are less than 48 hours from an assassination attempt, and they're still out there using this like extremist world is coming to an end type of rhetoric, trying to incite people. It's just anyway. Communications director for the Trump campaign. Her name is Caroline Sunshine, which, by the way, Caroline Sunshine has to be one of the best names for a communications director I have ever heard. She brings the sunshine every time she speaks. Caroline Sunshine for the Trump campaign said, it's very clear Joe Biden is not the person who can unify this country, as evidenced by that statement. Yeah, I would agree. But listen, there were some speeches given last night, and I would love y'all's thoughts on this. Two in particular have really raised eyebrows. The Teamsters Union, their president, Sean O'Brien, gave a fiery pro-union speech last night at the Republican National Convention. And the other one was influencer/rapper/ I'm not sure what else she's done, but she's a bit of a liberal activist at times. Amber Rose spoke. So what do you see in this? I mean, is this like a watering down of our standards, or is it a clear indication that we have a big tent and we're not saying you have to believe everything we believe on the platform to vote Republican? I got mixed feelings on it, but I'd love to hear y'all's thoughts. But Amber Rose, she's famous for having been, you know, in a relationship with Kanye West at one point. She's a model. She's a alternative lifestyle supporter. Activist. She started it, and I'm going to go ahead and say it. She started a thing out in California called the Slut Walk. I'm not sure what that's all about. And then you got the Teamsters. Story here from townhall.com about the Teamsters speech. I mean, I watched it, and at some point I looked at my son who was with me, and I said, how long is this guy going to speak? It's like he couldn't quit. It was this fiery, it's everything, it's the worker, it's all get out there and we're going to do all the things, big corporation America is bad. And he looked at it and go, wow. Story here on Town Hall saying it was an endorsement, it was a non-endorsement endorsement. Because the fact that he was there and thanking President Trump from the stage for opening the doors of the convention to allow the Teamsters to speak for the first time ever in the 121-year history sent a message. Because I will say this, I do believe that more and more the Republican Party has become the party of you know, blue-collar workers and just solid average citizens. I think more and more that's begun to, I mean, it's not that it's never been that way. I'm just saying that used to be the Democrats controlled the unions and the black vote. They always, we're the union, we're the black votes, we got all, and you can almost count on like a 98% turnout there, but it's faded in both regards. So yeah, Sean O'Brien from the Teamsters gave this like fiery, soaked in populist rhetoric speech about corporate America. But then he also said, I don't care if your name has a D or an R or an I next to it. We just want to know what you're going to do to help the American worker. Fair. That's fair. And I don't mind hearing that speech. But the thing that got me was we were hearing it at the Republican convention. Very interesting. And then the Amber Rose speech was, it's like, okay, so we just saw the Republican National Convention open in prayer, celebrate the fact that President Trump survived the assassination attempt. We're all united in the idea of getting Biden out of office. The platform was adopted the other day, had a little bit of a little bit of controversy on whether the platform was watered down on a few key cultural, social issues. But then we have Amber Rose and the Teamsters come speak, and we're like, didn't see that coming. So I want to know your thoughts on this. Do you feel like that in some way recognizes a watering down of standards, or is what we're seeing there the notion that we have a much bigger tent and we need to acknowledge that and let people be sort of on the team who may play one role, but they don't play all the roles? I just... Bit of a mixed bag, and you know, and I've said multiple times, like the whole LGBTQ activist lifestyle, I'm not for it. But I am not going to say that somebody's gay, they can't be Republican. There's some great Republicans who served in the Trump administration who were openly gay. But that being said, we didn't have anybody speak last night, and I'm glad of it, advocating for the lifestyle, because generally speaking, it's the left that goes into identity politics. But I think last night there was something going on there on the opening night to be able to have what I would call two keenly, selectively chosen speakers who didn't reflect what we would have expected in a speaker on the opening night of the RNC. Your thoughts? Tell me about it. Coming up next, Secretary of State Wes Allen calling in from Wisconsin. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all of the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number two on this Taco Tuesday. And we're in number one of the Triple Dipper. I'm still talking about the RNC and some of the things that happened, some of the things that didn't happen, and basically talking through, like, what did you think about the events? What did you think about the nomination of J.D. Vance? Well, on the phone with us right now is Alabama's Secretary of State, Wes Allen. You may recall Secretary of State Wes Allen was a probate judge here in Alabama down in the Pike Road area for a number of years. He went on to serve in the Alabama State House, and he is now the Secretary of State, which makes him also not just Secretary of State, you know, handling all the documents and everything related thereto and businesses and all of it, but he's the Chief Election Officer for the state of Alabama. And he's up in Wisconsin right now at the RNC on the line. Secretary of State Wes Allen, how you doing?
I'm good, Senator. Thanks for having me on. It's finally cooling off in Milwaukee. I think we brought the Alabama heat with us for the first couple of days. It was ridiculous. But finally, the showers moved through, and and it's finally cooling off. Thank goodness.
Well, good deal. Well, listen, just tell you what, give us your Congressman Barry Moore and State Representative Mac Butler both call in yesterday. So I'll just ask you the first thing I asked them. Give us your perspective on what it's like being there. What's the energy like? What have you seen?
Well, this is my first convention to ever attend. As long as I've been participating in Alabama Republican politics, you know, at the local level, on the executive committee, or at the state level, chairman of the Pike County Republican Party, being an elected Republican office for many years, this is the first time I've been here. And, you know, the energy is really incredible. I think after what happened Saturday, Phil, it really energized and galvanized and unified all the delegates, all the attendees, and just the American people from what they saw. And we're looking forward to hearing from President Trump on Thursday. When he came in the building last night, it was, I mean, my goodness, the electricity and just everybody, it was wonderful. And then, of course, I can't imagine what it's going to be like Thursday night when he actually takes the stage.
No, and I think we're looking forward to that. He's already made clear that he has scrapped the speech that he had already prepared in favor of something that he believes is going to be more unifying. And so I look forward to hearing about that. And then, of course, the nomination of J.D. Vance as his nominee. Your thoughts on that?
I think it's an excellent pick. I trust President Trump, you know, making that decision. I'm sure J.D. Vance, we've seen, you know, he's a freshman in the U.S. Senate. But I believe he is going to be an energetic, bold, conservative voice with that America First agenda to be able to crisscross the country and campaign all over, taking that message to the people of America, and looking forward to hearing from him on Wednesday. I think Wednesday he's supposed to speak. So looking forward to that. Great pick by President Trump.
Well, yeah, and I think that we're settling into that. Of course, the left immediately attacked, but what did we expect? I mean, he could have picked Mother Teresa, and they'd attacked. But
right.
But listen, let me ask you this: there's a report out that I haven't even had a chance to touch on yet that that Elon Musk has committed upwards of $43 million per month for the next several months. For a new PAC that is designed to get out the vote, encourage people to go to the polls, encourage them to use early voting if it's available to them, to not ever take a chance on not voting, no matter where they live. You're the chief election officer. What are your thoughts on the get out the vote efforts and what we need to be aware of and what we're hoping for? But at the same time, we got the SAVE Act out there. So what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm standing outside the arena, Phil, so excuse me if it's a little noisy. We got a helicopter flying over. But, yeah, I saw that headline about Elon and what he's committed to do for Super PAC to support President Trump and that America First agenda. You know, the thing I've been on the last month and a half or so is only American citizens should be allowed to vote in our election. And, of course, I think you've been keeping up what we've uncovered about Medicaid and DHR providing voter registration forms to those that are in the country legally and those that are illegal aliens. But when you couple that with the Biden executive order and he really trying to federalize, mobilize the entire federal apparatus to be voter registration agencies, I just don't believe the federal government ought to be involved in voter registration at taxpayer expense. I just don't think that's right. It should be left to the states. And the SAVE Act is very, very important. And we saw last week it come to a vote on the U.S. House floor. It passed, but 198 Democrats voted against, giving us the tools, me and my counterparts from around the country, the tools that we need to verify citizenship. I mean, this is common sense. I don't understand how the Democrats in the U.S. House would vote against that. I don't understand why Chuck Schumer will not give it a vote in the U.S. Senate. It's just beyond me. But we need the tools. We need better tools to verify citizenship. And we need to reform the National Voter Registration Act of 1993, bottom line. And I spoke with the House Speaker, Mike Johnson, this week, told him thank you for bringing that to a vote. I told him to not back down, keep pushing the issue. And that's why we've got to get President Trump. We've got to have a Senate GOP majority and a House GOP majority to pass those reforms. Common sense, reforms to help us maintain clean voter files. Voter file maintenance is the beginning of election integrity.
Yeah. Well, so let me ask you too in that regard. You know, we passed the law in Alabama to require photo ID, and we were told that it was going to be the end of the world. And yet your predecessor in the office of Secretary of State made sure that there was a means by which anyone in the state could get, in fact, even setting up mobile card making stations, could get a photo ID. And you guys still do that. Am I correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We do it. Matter of fact, we had a team go the other day when they were requested to be there to, if anybody needed a free photo identification, if they already didn't have a state issued driver's license or photo identification. That's when we step in and provide a identification to citizens of Alabama. Now, it's right now we've got about 3.7 million people in our that are voting age in Alabama, 18 years of age and older. We've got about 3.9 million voting age. We've got about 3.7 million that are registered to vote. That's about 96%, 97% that are registered to vote in our state.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear another word about voter suppression.
Yep.
And I mean, if people want to get registered to vote, they can get registered to vote. We make it easy to vote, register to vote with our online portal, through boards of registrars, through any number of ways. And if you don't have a photo identification on top of that, we'll go to your house and do it. I mean, we make available these means because we want people to participate in the voting process.
Well, absolutely. And do you guys ever field any like major complaints of, I felt disenfranchised, I didn't have the ability to get a photo ID? Has that ever been a big thing, really?
I've not had one phone call or one complaint come to me about what you just said.
Yeah. Well, I would expect no different. Listen, you're up there in Wisconsin. You got a full agenda. What do you expect tonight? What kind of events and things do you have going on?
Oh, listen, it's coming. They're about to open the doors and start letting folks in. The perimeter of this place, Senator, getting into downtown Milwaukee, the law enforcement presence has been really unbelievable, especially obviously since Saturday. And getting in this place is sometimes just arduous, but it needs to be. We got to protect the folks here. Got to protect the president. Got to protect all these other elected officials that are speaking. So I feel safe. I feel secure. I don't worry about any of that. So, but everybody's having a good time. Everybody is energized, ready to go, waiting on tonight's festivities. And then, of course, I think J.D. Vance tomorrow and the president on Thursday, and we're off to the races November 5th general election.
Well, it's right on the corner. It can't get here fast enough either, in my opinion. But
yeah, I know I'm ready.
Well, listen, thank you for what you're doing. Thank you for making time in the middle of all the hoopla to call into the show, and we'll have you back on again sometime soon. All right.
No problem at all. Thank you so much for always allowing me to come on your program, Phil. Thank you.
All right. Alabama Secretary of State Wes Allen out there at the Republican National Convention in Wisconsin. All right, Big Rig, let's take a break right now, brother. We'll take that break. We'll come right back, put a lid on this one, and then coming up bottom of the hour, don't forget, former U.S. Attorney Jay Towne calling in about the lawfare against Trump unraveling. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, giving you all the truth you can put on a bumper sticker. Keep in mind, coming up bottom of the hour after the next break, we'll have former U.S. Attorney Jay Towne calling in, going to give us the breakdown of what he sees in the most recent court rulings where they're unraveling the lawfare against Trump. So let me go back to this question of Amber Rose speaking at the convention last night. Amber Rose is not what you would consider to be the typical speaker at the Republican National Convention. This was by design. I think one of the things that has to be looked at is, like, when the Teamsters guy spoke, what's his name, Sean O'Brien? Sean O'Brien, when he spoke, and then when Amber Rose spoke, the question is, did they demand we come to their side and water down our standards, or did they come in and say, here we are, here's how we feel, we're looking at what you got? I can think back to how many times I have thought that a church is not supposed to be an exclusive country club. A church is supposed to be a hospital where the sick are welcome to get healed, right? Is it possible? Is it possible that by having Amber Rose speak last night, that we signaled to the world, come see what we got? Because the Teamster speech, I believe, was really dogmatic. It was adamant. It was kind of in your face. It was a, we're not changing who we are, but you know what? We'll work with you as long as you're for our side. That's what I heard from him. Amber Rose on the other side. Tattoo across her forehead. Alternative lifestyle. You know, just a bit unusual in the selection of someone who would speak at the RNC. She tended to give a speech, though, that said why she has come around to the positions of the Republican Party. What she's seen, and no one told her she was wrong for being there, and she was just there to say, I'm here, I'm a little different than the rest of you, but I kind of like some of the stuff you got. I'm looking at Joey Jones right now. You know Joey Jones. He's a commentator, the guy who lost his legs. He's a former Marine, explosive ordnance disposal guy. He's now on Fox News regularly. He said about Amber Rose that she's not there to represent conservatives or Republicans. She's there to represent Americans who are not familiar with conservative principles or Republican policies, but who may vote and are undecided. So opening the door with a common thread, then expose them to all that conservatism is. This is only difficult to understand if you built your brand on being upset or bombastic or offended or offensive or outraged. Okay, point taken. At the same time, were we watering down the standards by having someone who didn't already believe sharing the pulpit? Pulpit, I say that loosely. I'm not saying it was a church, but you know what I mean. Amber Rose herself has gotten just, you know, the usual haters from the liberal side calling her out for daring to be there. Joy Reid being one of them. Oh, Lord, Joy Reid. Are you going to quote Joy Reid? No, I'm not. But I'll tell you what Amber Rose said back to Joy Reid. Joy Reid apparently said something to her about choosing to ignore her black side because she's biracial. Her response on Twitter just a little while ago. Hi, Joy Ann Reid. I've never said I wasn't black. I said I identify as biracial. I'm not going to invalidate my white father just to make you feel comfortable. Stop being a race baiter. Your president does enough race baiting for all of us. Ooh. I think we may have a case of the enemy of my enemy is my friend. But anyway, there's a few others here. Let me get some text messages on the same topic, and then we're going to wind up hitting the break momentarily. Teresa from Town Creek says, last night's theme was Make America Wealthy Again. I think the speakers were given their versions of that. Tonight is Make America Safe Again. Interesting. Okay. Marie from Madison said, I forwarded Amber Rose's speech for every liberal news outlet and commentator I could think of at the time. I called it an inconvenient truth for the media and the Democrats. I also included in my message to them the key takeaway, which was one, her belief that Trump is racist. Two, her father challenging her to prove it. Three, her deciding to do her own research about him and discovering she had been believing lies, and said, you ought to check out Van Jones's response. Van Jones, liberal CNN commentator, called her speech one of the most dangerous things that happened for Democrats. Interesting. Very interesting. Rex from Huntsville says, Amber Rose was simply saying she supports Trump because he's not racist or trying to punish the gay community like the Dems have portrayed him. And she was advocating his economic policies. That's the breaking point for many who have historically been Democrat voters. Okay. So we're getting a mixed point here. Amber Rose from Navy Phil from Athens. Amber Rose's point centered on the lies the Democrats have been telling all these years. The Teamster's head stressed that he was about American workers. I believe he was about how big our tent really is and that we're accepting of those with whom we may disagree. We are adults and we can have reasonable and thoughtful discussions. I would agree with that. Now listen, there's a great book out there called Big Tent. It's on my shelf at home. It's a good one. It describes the fact that the conservative movement was built up of a variety of facets. Some were going to be war hawks or defense hawks. Some were going to wind up being economic hawks. Some were going to be, you know, fiscal conservatives. Others were going to be small government was their big thing. But the Big Tent brought the policies together. The question now is, can the Big Tent bring the voters together? I'm not looking to water down standards. had Amber Rose gone in there last night and said, "You need to adopt the you need to adopt the LGBTQ agenda as part of the platform, or we're going to all vote against you. We demand you be pro-abortion, or we all vote against you." Had she done that, I'd have an entirely different perspective. But what she did do, and great way of, I think it was Marie from Madison who pointed it out. What she did do was say, "I was believing lies. My dad told me I needed to check it out and see what was true. I did my own research. I realized I've been believing lies. And I'm here to tell you, I'm voting for Donald Trump. I'm voting Republican." Interesting. A lot more texts in the queue. I'll have to get to them as we go on. We're taking a break here momentarily. We're going to come right back and we're going to dive. Man, there's so many text messages. My word. I'm going to dive right into those after we get through with Jay Towne, former U.S. attorney, talking about the lawfare against Trump unraveling. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back.